Good evening, lovelies. Welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. My creative tonight is musician, entrepreneur, podcast host, and sustainable fashion designer, Tom Cridlin. When you read about the things that Tom has accomplished, you expect to be talking to someone well into their later ages. But this is a young man. This is a man that has accomplished all of this stuff in just the last 5 or 6 years since he graduated from college. He's an amazing conversationalist. He has interviewed some of the biggest stars in music. I am incredibly jealous about that fact. But we had an amazing conversation. And the fact that he has created a clothing line, including sweatshirts, t-shirts, pants, all of these things that are guaranteed to last for 30 years. 30 years. That's longer than I'll be here. He is just an amazing human, and I was very pleased to speak with him.
I am tickled, thrilled, and titillated to be partnering with Newsly for this episode. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural human voice. So no more, the temperature is 83 degrees. Newsly is a treat for the eyes and ears. For the first time in the history of the internet, the web becomes listenable. Browse articles from topics you choose and start playing. Stop scrolling, start listening, start Newsly-ing. And they have podcasts as well. You like podcasts? Who doesn't love a good podcast? Who doesn't love me? Well, with Newsly, you can explore trending podcasts from over 40 countries, including this one. Download and use Newsly for free now from www.newsly.me. Or follow the link in the description and use my promo code CCC2022 and receive a 1 month free premium description. And receive a 1 month free premium subscription. And receive a 1 month free premium subscription. Huge thanks to Newsly for partnering with Coffee, Candy, and Creatives.
So grab a cup of coffee or your favorite beverage, cuddle up with your host pup, and enjoy the show. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show. I'm so excited to talk to you. I have wanted to talk to you for months. You have no idea.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, your email came across from your rep, and I was like, this guy. And I got it during the month of Earth Day, and I just started this show last April, 2021. So my whole first month was everything eco. I was talking to, you know, environmentalists. I was talking to the guys from BioFriendly. And I was like, I want this guy because you're so young and have already done so much. So I was ecstatic about that. And also, forget the amazing podcast. Forget the music. I absolutely loathe this trash fashion. And you've created something. If I bought a hoodie today, it would outlast me probably, right?
Oh, I doubt that, Puff.
Well, I'd have to leave it to someone in my will. No, you've created and you've come up with these sustainable, long-lasting clothes. And I don't want to name names, but you know those companies that are making this crap, right? It's not good for the environment. It's not made in a healthy way. And I saw, I think it was in Chile, this desert or this valley that's just full of garbage clothing that's just dumped there. So take me, we'll talk about everything else too, but I really wanted to talk about the clothing because if you can't tell, I'm excited about it. So how do you go from being a musician and, you know, a host of your amazing show to, you're obviously environmentally conscious, right? So how does that lend itself to creating a fashion line?
Well, actually, the clothing came for the other two. The clothing was first.
Okay.
And that was when I graduated from university. And I started off focused on making trousers or pants, as they're known in America. And, you know, it was just a line of colorful pants. And, you know, I didn't know that much about fashion. I just wanted to start my own e-commerce business because I didn't want to work as an accountant, which was my preordained future. So I got interested in sustainable fashion as a result of that. And needless to say, just my simple business idea was not doing anything spectacular. And as I got more interested in sustainable fashion, this was back in 2015 when brands weren't really as focused on saying that they're sustainable. It was sort of before that became a trend. And I just came up with this idea because obviously I don't have the budget to invest in kind of, you know, making everything out of recycled, you know, moss or fish leather or some wonderful companies who do all of this incredible kind of more sciencey type of stuff to try and be sustainable. There's lots of investment in research and development on their part. On my part, I thought, okay, well, sustainability is going to be the future of fashion. What can I do to prove that, you know, I'm a sustainable fashion brand? And then I thought of this 30-year guarantee, guaranteeing the first garment to get it was a sweatshirt. So the 30-year sweatshirt. And I launched that in 2015 in the summer. And that really changed my life because it got picked up in the press, both in the UK and in America and elsewhere in just random countries in like Germany and Brazil. In fact, Germany, the people there are probably one of my biggest customer bases, as big as the UK and the US. So they obviously love sustainability, but that's how it came about. You know, I started being interested in sustainable fashion because I was in the fashion industry already as a beginner, as a novice. And then I just came up with this idea based on the fact that I thought sustainability and sustainable fashion was going to be the future.
Right. And it's so funny that you go into fashion and you're like, trousers. Everybody needs them, right? You can't very well
work
without them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I just thought, you know, I was inspired by brands like Harry's, the shaving company, or, well, a better example is Greats, who, you know, they haven't done anything kind of spectacular. They've not done anything like Harry's, the shaving brand, but there were these two brands. And Greats just made only sneakers. And so I thought, okay, well, I just want to make one type of garment and do it really well and design the website beautifully. And in fact, a brand has come along in the UK and done that idea, but they had multi-million pound investment, whereas I started with a £6,000 government startup loan. Right. They're called Spoke, and they started only doing trousers. Perhaps they've expanded now, but yeah. So, you know, there is something to be said for sticking to something, sticking to your niche.
Right, because I feel like the more you spread yourself out, the less attention is given to the products. Yeah. It's like having more than one child, you know?
Exactly.
It's so funny that you went from a £6,000 loan to a multi-million dollar company and just pants, trousers, britches. But you know, some of the best people have started, Freddie Mercury, for example, if we're going to talk music, had a stall, right? I forget the name of the market, but, you know, started off just selling things that he wanted to wear and just, you know, baby steps and you grow. And I love
that. Yeah, absolutely.
For people, they have to go and check out the website. It's tomcridland.com. They can find all the clothing options, but they're simple, but they're also cute, if that makes sense. But the idea, going to the idea of like a third world country, where you're supplying t-shirts and pants that are going to last people, that again, with the kid, you know, reference, hand-me-downs. If you're one of more than, you know, if you're not an only child, especially if you're a younger child, I was oldest, thank God I got the clothes first, but for the younger kids, the hand-me-downs, they kind of get raggedy as they go along. So for lower income families or people, you know, they can't go out to the mall and buy new clothes, you know, every school year, something that's sustainable and will last long and look good for a very long time. I mean, that's an amazing concept. And you're right, talking about, everybody would love to say, oh, we're going to make our clothes out of recycled plastic. That's going to kill two birds with one stone. Not that we're killing birds, but it's going to get rid of this excess plastic and it's going to provide, you know, a nice clothing source. But it costs a lot of money. That's what's so sad about like recycling. It's so expensive. Everybody would love to. They would love to take their cans and make cars out of it, right? Everybody wants to make stuff, and it always comes down to money.
Yeah, it absolutely does. But you know, if you hold on to your clothing for longer, that's an easy thing that you can do to be more environmentally friendly. And also it means that the clothing will have been well made, because nobody's going to give you a guarantee of 3 decades long, right, a 30-year guarantee, if they've not made the clothing that's going to last that long in the first place. Right. So, you know, you're getting better clothing, you're doing right by the environment. It's it's sort of a win-win. There's actually something in it for the customer. It's not just like being asked to donate to XYZ charity upon checkout, or you know, it's not like being asked to do your recycling. It's not like, I mean, obviously those things have a benefit, but there's actually something in it for you other than, you know, saving the planet. Because I think people get somewhat infuriated by the very rich and the very famous kind of pointing the finger at lower income families, people with problems, people who are struggling to pay the bills. You know, they don't need to be lectured by Hollywood film stars on the fact that they need to be more green and more eco-friendly. Right. Because if anybody's got the resources to help the environment, it's the people who aren't struggling to pay the bills. It's the rich and famous. So that, I mean, that's why I think events like COP26 grated somewhat with the general public. And I think it's better to try and have something where it's like, oh, a sweatshirt with a 30-year guarantee, that's cool. Like, I'm going to see if it lasts for 30 years. I'm going to save money. I'm not going to have to replace it all the time. You know, that's just an example of an idea. Like, people are more interested in a Tesla, for example, than they are in being told by, you know, people at COP26 that they need to sort out their lives and, you know, change the way they live, etc.
So, right, and it's got to be frustrating to have someone who has like 5 cars telling you you need to do better about your footprint. They've got 3 homes. They've got 5 cars. They've got closets full of clothing and makeup and things. And it's like, okay, but we're just like here in our little middle class, lower class. We're recycling our cans and jars because, you know, we think it's a good idea. So don't point your finger at us. Like you said, don't point your finger at us and say, you should be more green. Well, listen, I would put not a lot of money, but I would put money on it that we're probably a lot more eco-friendly than these people that are out there going to dinners for Greenpeace or for, you know, all these different organizations talking about climate change when they accept their awards. No offense to celebrities, because y'all can come on my show, I don't care. But I'm just saying, it's very easy for the very wealthy to say things like that. You're right.
Yeah, no, I think so. And it's horrible for people to feel like they're not doing enough, but sometimes it's just not within reach if you've got other things to be concerned about, like paying the bills.
Exactly. Well, like I was saying, when I was speaking to people during Earth Day, every single person I spoke to, their mantra was the same. Even a small change is a change. Even a small effort, you know, is an effort. The smallest thing that you could do. The bio-friendly guys, they said, turn your water off when you're brushing your teeth. It's so simple. Just these little tiny things. You don't have to make a big extravagant gesture. Every little thing. It's better than doing nothing, honestly.
Yeah, it costs you nothing, a habit like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have been listening to your podcast. Again, I didn't realize, because when you read up on you, if you ever Google yourself, if you read up on you, it's like, wow, this guy, he's accomplished so much. He's prolific. He's amazing. And then I'm like, he's 31. What? I expected you to be like in your 50s or your 60s. I'm like, this dude, you have talked to some of the coolest people on your podcast. Damn it if it didn't just leave my head.
Greatest music of all time.
Thank you. Greatest music of all time podcast with you. You've talked to Colin Hay. You've talked to Annie Lennox, who's a goddess. Smokey Robinson, Eric Roberts, Kevin Bacon, Tito Jackson, Moby, all of these people. How long have you been doing the show? How far back?
I started it in early 2020 was when I started releasing episodes.
Holy crap.
Yeah. So it's not been that long. It's been a 2 years, basically. And coming up to the 500th episode. So it's definitely been prolific. You've been right about that, but it's been such a blast. And yeah, so
that's
amazing to speak to these people.
Catalog for 2 years. I mean, that's hefty.
Yeah.
How blessed, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a complete dream come true to speak to these people. And that was the whole aim of it. It wasn't like a business idea or anything. It was just like a bucket list thing of
yeah,
to have conversations with some of these incredible artists and musicians. And, you know, then I decided to make it a continuous thing that I just want to keep going with, because why would I want to stop having these incredible chats right. with people like that? So yeah, I can't believe how lucky I am to have this podcast.
Right. And if you approach it rather than, oh, this is a job, I'm a host, they're the guest. It's like, no, I'm meeting a friend or an acquaintance or someone I really want to talk to over drinks or over coffee or, you know, and just have that relaxed and engagement. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So
was this a pandemic thing, or is this just something that was always in the back of your mind?
Oh, this started, I started recording the episodes before the pandemic.
Oh, okay.
When the pandemic hit, I had 40 episodes recorded and I decided to release them.
Holy cow. And
then during the pandemic, I recorded a lot more on Zoom because, of course, we were stuck at home. Mm-hmm. So that's how it kind of evolved. And now it will hopefully go back to more of a hybrid. There'll be some episodes recorded over Zoom and hopefully a decent number in person too, because that's always great.
Right. I have not had the opportunity yet to have an in-studio conversation, partly because these people are from all over the world that I'm blessed enough to talk to, but also because we're, you know, trying to social distance and things like that, to where even if we were in the same town, we kind of be like, I don't know. But I think also people find it a little less nerve-wracking with a computer screen between them sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know if you found that with interviewing, or are people more relaxed when they're with you because they can pick up on your body language and they're like, oh, okay.
I think there are pros and cons to both. I mean, certainly at a stage of the coronavirus pandemic, I think people, it wouldn't have been a wise idea to suggest in person. But before coronavirus, definitely in person was the norm. You wouldn't have even thought about suggesting Zoom,
right?
Something like this. And then, yeah, I mean, after that, these days, it's a bit of both. Some people really want to do in person, and some people would prefer Zoom. And sometimes Zoom is just more convenient.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the Zoom side of things will go away, because it just makes more sense at certain times. If people are going to be thousands of miles away, you know, why wait to record just so that you can do it in person? But if you can make in person possible, then you can kind of record something better quality, particularly if you want to do a video component, etc. So right. Yeah, I definitely see it moving forward as a hybrid, and yeah, there are massive pros to both of them. There's definitely more of an atmosphere in person. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to pretend, you know, like I preferred to interview Smokey Robinson backstage at his concert, or I preferred to interview Verdeen White of Earth, Wind & Fire at his house than I would have over Zoom, because you get the whole experience of going to kind of see these places and kind of get momentarily immersed in their world. And that's like a real privilege. So that's an example of something that makes in person, you know, depending on who it is, slightly better maybe than virtual.
Right. Because like you said, you're at someone's house, and, you know, maybe the wife or the husband or whoever comes out and is like, would you like some tea? And you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'll be honest with you, I didn't even know what Zoom was a year ago. I had no clue. The most tech savvy I was like, oh, okay, I think I can figure out FaceTime. It's been a real learning curve for the past, you know, almost a year at just figuring it out. Now I'm an old hand at it, but I still sometimes sometimes forget to hit record. I keep looking to make sure I'm recording. But, you know, but Zoom has been so helpful. Like you're in the UK, I'm in Florida. I've spoken to someone in South Africa. I spoke to someone in Brazil, you know.
Wow, yeah.
What? it blows my mind. It blows my mind. And yeah. It's such a blessing.
Yeah, it definitely opens up the possibility of being prolific and being able to kind of speak to people immediately without lots of cost as well. Because obviously, if you're going to travel to all of those places, South Africa and Brazil, or you know, all over the world, it would cost quite a lot of money to put all of that together if you have to go to them to record. Whereas Zoom, you know, means that you can just do it more kind of conveniently.
Absolutely. I just have to figure out the time zone changes.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you get more organized guests than me normally.
Oh, stop it. I'm loving this. This is amazing. So take me in. You said that the fashion came first and then the music?
Yes. So then the music and the podcast came round about at the same time. So it's only been a couple of years on both of those projects.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I mean, I basically started making music when I stopped drinking. Before, I was just a big music fan. I didn't really make any music. And then when I gave up drinking a few years ago, I decided that I wanted to start, rather than having drinking as my main hobby, have music as my main hobby. And it's been awesome. Yeah.
Well, that's a good substitution.
Exactly.
Well, congratulations on your sobriety. That's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a wonderful replacement for drinking, because to be a good musician requires so much commitment, so many hours, so much practice.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be no time for drinking. If you added alcohol into the equation, for me, I wouldn't be able to cope. I know some people have managed to cope very well, but I'm not one of them.
I mean, we're not saying the Rolling Stones, but we're saying the Rolling Stones.
Well, exactly.
What a concept, though, to replace an unhealthy habit with a healthy goal. I mean, that you created a new entire lifestyle, like you said, with the practice and the rehearsals, and I'm assuming you play instruments.
Yeah, so I mean, I started by learning the drums, and so I sing. That's been my main thing, but initially I was playing drums and singing at the same time. I switched, which was a bit of a big decision to make, because I only obviously started making music recently, and I'd made a decent start with the drums, and singing and playing drums at the same time is hard. So, you know, but I just decided, actually, if I'm a singer, I need to be a front man. I'd better play a different instrument, not the drums, which tends to be at the back.
Mm-hmm.
So I switched to piano over lockdown. And now I'm singing and playing piano, but it's still very, very intense. And it was a bit like, you know, giving up a year and a half of playing lots of gigs. And I've just gone on tour with the Stylistics, supporting them. But for that tour, I just sang, because my piano wasn't kind of, I didn't want to play piano in front of like 2,000 people or something.
Right.
So yeah, I just, you know, I just sang and focused on the vocals. But yeah. I'm playing piano these days, and it's a real pleasure, yeah, because I'm a big Elton John fan, of course.
Well, I was going to say that you pulled a little bit of a Phil Collins as well, coming
out from
Kit.
I'm a massive Phil Collins fan as well, so.
He's amazing.
Unbelievable.
Phenomenal. I didn't obviously listen to all 500 episodes.
Of course.
Have you spoken with him?
I have not spoken with Phil Collins, but I have to rectify.
Absolutely. I heard that he was on tour last year, or he's coming on tour this year. And the
Genesis have been on tour.
Okay. And the discussion was that his health was not the best. And I was like, you know what? Don't use that ageism, especially when it comes to performers that we love, because we've lost so many. We've lost so many good ones.
Mm.
You know? If they can still stand up and they want to, let them. Don't come at me with that he's frail or he or she's too old. Don't give me that nonsense.
Yeah, well, I think half the time with this stuff, that it's like very easy to sit there and make a comment, but how about you get up there and try and do it?
Right. Yeah, I'm pretty.
Get into an arena full of 20,000 people, age 75 with a bad back, and try standing up. For me, it's a privilege. I agree with what you're saying completely. It's a privilege to go and see Phil Collins live. If he's willing to do it, sat down with his incredible band, he's got like a 9 or 10 piece band playing all these amazing songs live and singing them. I went to see him a few years ago. I saw him, he sat down. Like, I'd have rather that he wasn't sat down, but it's not like Phil Collins is renowned for his like good dancing.
Right.
Shame to not see him playing drums, but you know, he can't play drums anymore. What are you going to do? I still want to see him and his amazing band. That's my view on it. You know, I just saw Elton in New Orleans, and he's not as good as he was 2 years ago. Like, his piano playing has got worse, his singing has got worse, because he hasn't played for 2 years.
Yeah.
But it was still an unbelievable show. And a lot of these greats, like Phil Collins, they're not going to be around in, you know, let's say 20 years.
Right.
In ill health at the moment. It's very sad, because I don't see the crop of artists that are big now being an adequate replacement for the greats that we're going to lose.
Absolutely not. I 1,000% agree. God, we lost George Michael, we lost Prince, we lost Meatloaf, and you're right. Think about it. Like, who now could possibly, I can't think of anybody.
Really anyone, not anyone with the catalog.
Yeah, exactly.
The songs aren't good enough, really.
Right. I mean, we could probably off the top of our heads point out some talented voices.
Oh yeah,
but
yeah,
do they have the recognition? You know.
Well, I mean, I personally, like, I don't think Adele, for example, or Ed Sheeran are as good as Phil Collins and Elton John and George Michael and Prince and David Bowie. All of these people, Queen. I don't think they are as talented. I don't, you know, it's not, well, maybe it's not a question of talent. It's not a question of voice. Like, Adele is probably a better singer than John Lennon, but like, who's got the better songs, Adele or the Beatles? You know, I just feel that, and also I don't know whether they've got the appetite to perform live that some of the greats do. People like Elton play 120 times a year. Phil Collins played all the time. The Stones played all the time. You know, Adele doesn't seem to enjoy performing. I know Ed Sheeran quite likes playing.
I would love to meet him. He seems like he'd be just the coolest dude to hang out with.
Ed Sheeran, yeah. Well, I mean, he's hardworking. You've got to respect his hustle.
Yeah.
He does seem like a relaxed type of guy. And the fact that he plays by himself solo, you know, you've got to respect that too. So. Yeah, I mean, he'll be around, but I'm just saying, on balance, they're not going to be a huge number.
No, you're right. And when it comes to the performing aspect, I think you're right as well, because I swear that the Rolling Stones were just here a few months ago. It feels like here in Florida. I want to say that they came to either Orlando or West Palm Beach or something. Aren't they 90? I mean... But they're out there, and they're not just standing there. They're not just like, Mick Jagger, he's still out there dancing. He's still out there. And I'm thinking, I hurt my back getting off the couch. It's all a mindset. And I did catch your video about the Adele cancellation. We don't have to go into that, but I did catch that. So I know where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And you're right. I don't think that a lot of current bands put on quite the performance. There's not that I guess flamboyance, maybe the theatrical aspect of it. To see a Queen show back in the day, like 1986 Wembley Stadium concert, baby, my kid, I had it on DVD. It was his favorite thing to watch when he was a little guy. Like, he would watch it. We went through 3 DVDs because they got wore out from being played so long.
But
it was so much. I went to see Queen and Paul Rogers.
Oh, right. Wow.
2005, I think, or 2006. That was a great concert, but it was missing some because it didn't have Freddie, right? I was tickled pink to see Brian and Roger, but there's something about certain dynamics, I guess, and the performances that they put on.
That's probably the best gig that I've ever seen footage of, the Wembley 1986. Like, I've got the DVD as well, so, you know, I've had that exact experience with it.
It's so beautiful.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Really? I mean, people always, not to go off on a Queen tangent, because I can, people always talk about Live Aid, Live Aid, Live Aid. Absolute respect for Live Aid. But for me, it's live at Wembley Stadium.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think that is bigger, better performance than Live Aid. You know, I think Wembley was the one for sure.
Yeah. And you were probably just a baby when it was there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of Ed, going back to Ed Sheeran really quick. No, I'm lost in the music. But going back to Ed Sheeran, and I can't remember his goddamn name. James Blunt. James Blunt was another one who could stand there with his guitar and just amaze you.
Yeah, but he wrote some great songs.
Where's he? These people that you think are going to be not the next big thing. I don't want to say the next big thing, but you're going to be like, oh, okay, this is the so and so of our time, and then you're going, oh yeah, I remember that guy. Whatever happened to him?
Yeah, right? Well, there's so much content being thrown in our faces. I mean, I'm sure James Blunt would still play pretty big venues in Europe. Yeah. I don't know about in America, but he'd probably still play arenas in Europe.
Right.
Because those songs have kind of continued being listened to and being appreciated. But yeah.
Back to Bedlam is, the whole entire album is amazing.
Oh yeah, that's an amazing album. But yeah, he's not sort of at the forefront. He's not a major league pop star anymore. To have that type of longevity is very, very difficult.
I feel like you're right. I feel like it's too much of an influx. It's too much information. The next new thing, the next Britney, the next, you know, Christina, the next Fall Out Boy or whatever. You're just inundated with too much that you can't. It's like if you have way too many choices of what to eat, you're going to be like, well, I'm not hungry anymore because I can't decide. So I'm not going to listen to any of these songs because there's too many. I can't take it.
Yeah.
You know,
you're absolutely right.
I feel like you're right. I think with the technology, there's too many options. I mean, you can listen to music anywhere, everywhere.
Yeah. There's so much available that you just don't know where to start, I feel like, these days. But at the same time, the benefit is that for £10 a month, you're getting, you know, all the records.
Thousands,
ever.
Yeah.
So if you had to go back to buying records one by one, I think you'd be quite frustrated as a consumer. So it's all too easy to slag off streaming, but it's a good deal for the consumer. It's just not a good deal for the artist.
Right. And there's been a lot of controversy about that recently and in the past. I mean, I think Taylor Swift had a big hullabaloo about it.
Yeah, she did.
The other thing about the too much new music is, for me, it sends me back to the things I know, the comforting things, the Queen, you know, the music I've listened to 1,000 times before, to where my only concept of what's new and exciting is that it's being overplayed on the radio or on TikTok.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, who's this? Olivia who? Oh, okay. Well, all I know about this song is that backing track is from this song, you know, back in the day. And I think that's another problem people have with current music, people have a problem with current music is it's not original.
Yeah, it's a lot of it is sampled and stuff.
Yes.
Which obviously can be done brilliantly, but it's just a shame to not have so many brilliant new ideas, brilliant new melodies as you used to get, because almost everything, I don't even know how much of an exaggeration this is, but you hear a good song and you're like, oh, that's great. Like, I mean, it's a 20-year-old record, but I remember there's this record by Nelly and Kelly Rowland called Dilemma. And I always thought, oh, that's such a beautiful melody. Mm-hmm. And then I did the other day, was listening to this playlist of Philadelphia soul music, and I just heard the exact same melody on a Patti LaBelle song. And I was like, oh my God, literally everything is just a rehash of a good 70s or 80s project.
Yeah. There's a guy on social media who does that. He's like, you like this song? Well, it came from this song, but guess what? It also came from this song. I mean, he's gone back to like the 50s. He's like, oh yeah, the 70s, but back here. So it, and vanilla ice learned the hard way. You don't do that with cream. Talk about cream.
Absolutely.
Whew, you guys, you have come to the end of part one of my conversation with creative Tom Cridlin. We talked so much that Zoom kicked us out. Stay tuned for part two. It'll be up in a couple days. Follow me on social media. I am Pup Duffy on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. You can follow the show on Facebook. It's Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. Head over to tomcridlin.com. You can find out all about Tom's music. It has links to his show, and you can find out about his wonderful clothing line. Go over to beunique.org while you're surfing the net. Like, follow, and support my beautiful humans over there. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to Newsly for sponsoring this episode. As always, take care of each other. Love each other. Watch each other's backs and come back on Tuesday for part two of this amazing Tom Cridlin. My beautiful lovelies, if you like the music that you hear when you're listening to Coffee, Candy, and Creatives, the music you hear during the intros and outros, that is the amazing country music singer, Raleigh Keegan. Go to RaleighKeegan.com. You can purchase a physical CD. You can purchase downloads of all his available albums. You can keep up to date on tour dates and new releases. And you can be entertained because Raleigh is not only a talented musician, but he thinks he's a comedian. He's also a dear friend. So please go to RaleighKeegan.com and get your music on.